Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Yesterday, the FX Hulu original series Mrs. America received 10 Emmy nominations, including one for Best Limited Series. It's a fictionalized account of Phyllis Schlafly's ability to mobilize conservative women in this country to fight the Equal Rights Amendment, which Congress passed in 1972. All while feeding her own ambition and, ironically, acting a bit like a feminist herself. Mrs. America doesn't take on the traditional binary hero-villain. It's more nuanced than that. The 9-part series does not shy away from tackling the divisions within the feminist movement as it explores the motivations of the women involved in Stop ERA. It's a story of political maneuvering, a history lesson, and a reminder that the experiences and opinions of women never have been and never will be monolithic. Yesterday, several of Mrs. America's stars were recognized for their work. Uza Aduba was nominated for her role as Shirley Chisholm, Tracy Ullman for her portrayal of Betty Friedan, and Margot Martindale for playing Bella Abzug. Oscar winner Cate Blanchett, who stars as Schlafly, received her first Emmy nomination. Now, if you haven't seen Mrs. America yet, here's a preview.
I am not against women. I am not against women working outside the home. But what I am against is the women's liberation movement.
Who the hell is Phyllis Schlafly?
We need to get the word out quickly. We want the right to be a mother, the right to be a wife. The libbers want to create a sex-neutral feminist totalitarian nightmare.
Do you know what you're saying has no basis in fact?
Our movement is about fighting the oppression of all women.
We do not want housewives thinking that we are against them.
We are against them.
Revolutions are messy. How long are we supposed to wait? How much time do we give people to adapt to change? Or am I the only one who's tired of waiting?
Cate Blanchett joined us the show's premiere week to discuss Mrs. America, along with showrunner and writer Davi Waller and executive producer Stacey Scherer. Stacey and I are both Gen Xers, so I asked her what was her first real-life memory of Schlafly, and now that she's a grown-up and a producer, why she decided that this was a project she wanted to move forward with.
I remember growing up, and she kind of blended together for me with Anita Bryant at the time. And, you know, I also am of the vintage where first we kind of apologized for being feminist, the sort of I'm not a feminist, but. And fortunately, by the 90s, I had gotten over that. In the summer of 2016, I saw a documentary while we were around the same time of the election that we are now, and looking at the opposition and that Hillary Clinton faced and the misogyny. And I saw this piece talking about Phyllis and Phyllis as sort of a feminist and thought it would be a great way to tell the story of the ERA. And Davi's so extraordinarily talented, and I'd been lucky enough to work with her in the past and instantly approached her to see if she thought this would be a worthy endeavor.
So, Davi, when you first sat down to envision what the show would look like, what was the biggest challenge? What was kind of thorny that was a little bit hard to figure out?
There were two things that are a little thorny. One was that Phyllis Schlafly was the singular leader of the Stop the ERA opposition. On the feminist side, you had many feminist leaders. It was wonderfully democratic and, like most social change movements, you know, messy and lots of different people with ideas of ways to move forward. So how to have in that asymmetrical structure, how to create a structure for the series in which all these incredible feminist leaders get their due, as opposed to making it seem as if there was only one feminist leader, which would not have been accurate. And so wanting to come up with a more unconventional structure for the series to rotate and really allow each feminist leader to have their aria, so to speak. The other thorny issue was that most of the feminist leaders who debated Phyllis Schlafly, if not all of them, were white feminists. And did not want the series to leave out the story of intersectional feminism, which really began in earnest in the 1970s. So figuring out a way to bring Shirley Chisholm, Flo Kennedy, and all the wonderful Black feminist leaders into a story when Phyllis Schlafly's Your Way In was probably one of the biggest challenges as a writer.
So Kate, what was it about the way the script was written that appealed to you?
Well, right off the bat, I found the pitch so exciting when I met Stacey and Darby, because much to my shame, you know, back in 2001, there was this survey where 72% of Americans already thought that the Constitution specified that citizens had equal rights, irrespective of their gender. And I was one of those people. And so I thought, hang on, they want to talk to me about the Equal Rights Amendment? Isn't that already in the Constitution? Mm-hmm. So I was already ambushed by the concept. And I was so intrigued by such a simple, innocuous but vitally important concept as equality. I thought, how has this been politicized? And anyone who wanted to fight that hard to dismantle the notion of equality, I wanted to know why. So I was really intrigued by Darby and Stacey talking about approaching the story through, I suppose, the less obvious perspective, which is that of the traditional women, the conservative women, the so-called homemakers, and so that was, I think, what really drew me in. And also it's that wonderful but shocking realization that a period of history that you think you know everything about becomes not only there's so many, as Darby was saying, so many points of intersectional feminism, like Audre Collomerot, for example, who was a Republican Black feminist, you know, all of these pockets that I thought that I knew about but I knew nothing about. But also the fact, as we were developing it and then shooting it and in post-production, just how it felt like Groundhog Day, and all of these issues that I thought were put to bed and that were no-brainers and that we thought we'd won those victories, were suddenly, it was all up for grabs again. So it feels like I'm right back there in 1972 in some ways.
Darby, what did you want to capture about Schlafly? What did you think was her superpower?
Her name. There's so many complicated names. Ruckelshaus, Schlafly, Abzug. You know, could you have more tricky names?
So, Darby, what do you think? What was it that you wanted to capture, and really, what was her talent?
I think she had a great talent for messaging. She really found a way to tap into a very real fear of traditional politically conservative women at that time. And I think she had a great superpower for grassroots organizing. She was one of the best grassroots organizer of that time period. And I wanted to capture all the different contradictions in her, all the different competing motivations, and really capture someone who's three-dimensional and who is complicated.
It's so interesting because my next question has the word three-dimensional in it. It's for Kate. What in your research about her did you use to make her three-dimensional so that she wasn't sort of the female equivalent of a mustache twirler?
Well, you know, I think you have to realize as an actor when you go into this that it is a hotbed, and that there's going to be a lot of hot button issues for people whichever side of the line they have fallen out. You know, there's a lot of unresolved resentment, I think, that lies from the 70s and 80s, and even when you mention the word feminism now, it's a politicized term. So you know that no matter what you do, no matter how you portray any of these characters, people are going to have issue with them. But so in the end, I think you have to be part of the telling of the story. But for me, I think it was the pull that all the women had, you know, between their personal life and their political life. And, you know, in that regard, very little has changed for women. There's still a public self-justification that has to go on in terms of where they spend their time. And I think that is something that you can see alive in the series, no matter whether the woman works at home or whether she works, you know, externally, or which side of the political divide she falls on. And I think that there's, you know, for me, first and foremost, I started with her authorized biography, The Sweetheart of the Silent Majority, because I wanted to delve into Phyllis as she felt that she was well served. And so it was a really interesting biography. So before watching anything, before reading everything, because Phyllis is a very polarizing figure. She's a Joan of Arc for some people, but she's the Antichrist for some. And somewhere between those two probably lies the truth. But I wanted to hear her in her own words. And Carol Felfenstahl's biography was really my starting point.
My guests are Kate Blanchett, Davi Waller, and Stacey Scher. We're talking about their new project, Mrs. America, about Phyllis Schlafly and the ERA movement. So, Stacey, what about the title? Why Mrs. America?
Well, I think I'll throw that one to Davi because it was her great invention.
What do you think, Davi? What went into that decision?
I'm sure at some point in reading various articles, the term Mrs. America sort of was out there. And the reason I rested on it was I was reading about all in the newspapers. I would look at local newspapers from the time period and get a sense of what were Republican conservative women up to. And they used to throw these fashion shows as political fundraisers. And the women who are like wives of governors and wives of senators, so very accomplished women, would be parading around in various red, white, and blue costumes and wardrobes. And the pageantry of it really spoke to me, and Mrs. America just kind of stuck in my head as sort of very evocative of what it meant to be a Republican woman in 1971. That became the title.
When we first meet Phyllis, she's in a two-piece bathing suit at one of these fundraising events. Why did you want that to be the opening shot, Davi?
Yes, why, Davi, why? I need to know.
When we met with Kate, she's like, how many months will we shoot?
But can I tell you, you know you're in a production produced by women when they say, okay, we're going to give you 3 weeks before we shoot the bathing suit sequence. You know, they know that it's a concern for a woman of a certain age.
and
appear on television in a bathing
quickly.
Suit. So I appreciated that.
We gave you time and got it out of the way quickly.
Well, I think you really, this series is not a traditional biopic. It's not a traditional historical drama in which we're following just the chronological events. And so I wanted to start with something bold that really brings you in and says, this is a different kind of period drama. It's going to be fun. It's going to be sexy. It's going to be intimate. There's a lot going on. And also really capture in that first image all the contradictions of Phyllis Schlafly. You know, this is a woman who, yes, was putting on fashion shows. At the same time, 2 years earlier, she herself was running for Congress. And that, you know, that pageantry at the top with her backstage conversation with Congressman Phil Crane, played by the amazing James Marsden, sort of captures that contradiction in her within the first minute.
So, Kate, now we know what Kate the human being was thinking in that bathing suit. But you playing Phyllis, what was Phyllis thinking as she's walking down, parading in front of these people in a bathing suit when she's really a foreign policy wonk?
Yes, I mean, that's the thing about that Phyllis, the Equal Rights Amendment was not her her raison d'etre until she associated it with its encroaching denudement of U.S.'s defense policy. Defense was her passion. But I think in a lot of ways, Phyllis was a political animal, you know, whether it's on a grassroots level or, you know, her desire to have influence in Washington. I think the ends justify the means. So if you need to behave that way, it doesn't mean that you're a swimsuit model, but it means that you raise money for Phil Crane, and therefore that will help his campaign, whatever I need to do that. But she was also a highly principled person who had two failed bids for Congress herself behind her. So she was incredibly complicated. And I think there is such a a wealth of perceived understanding about who she was and what she fought for and ultimately what her legacy was, which was very divisive. There's no, you know, no matter which way you stand, it was divisive. And so I think to ambush an audience from the get-go was very important to say, this is not going to be what you think it's going to be. As Darby said, it's not a biopic. It's not about Phyllis Schlafly. It's about all of the women. And my husband, who, you know, he'd obviously read the scripts but hadn't been on set very much, watched at the end, and he said there was so... He was, having watched all nine parts, he said there's so much connective tissue between all these women that none of them actually get to fully realize, unless they step outside the political system, they can't fully actualize within it. And Phyllis, you know, one of those people. But I do think, in terms of the bathing suit, it's the end justifying the means. And, you know, we see that in politics today, mm-hmm. you know, exaggerations and inflammatory sensationalism, fear-mongering, they're all okay if it draws attention to what that person's perceived sense of truth is.
We're listening to my conversation with creator and showrunner Davi Waller, executive producer Stacey Scherer, and executive producer and actor Cate Blanchett. They were on the show in April to discuss the FX show Mrs. America, which just received 10 Emmy nominations and is streaming on Hulu. We will be back with more after the break. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart, and we're back with more of my conversation from this past April with creator and showrunner Davi Waller, executive producer Stacey Scherer, and executive producer and actor Cate Blanchett. We were discussing Mrs. America during its premiere week. The series is about Phyllis Schlafly and the effort to stop the passage of the ERA. The series received 10 Emmy nominations yesterday. Each of the 9 episodes in the series focuses on a different woman and what was going on with that person, as well as the ERA, creating a parallel between the personal and the political. And that includes Gloria Steinem, who is portrayed by Rose Byrne in some amazing wigs. I asked Davi Waller, were you able to speak with Gloria before you wrote the series?
I was not able to speak with Gloria, no.
If you could ask her a question, what would it have been? Now that you've seen the whole thing and you've written the whole thing, was there some question in your mind that you still have?
That's a great question. I think I would ask her, knowing what you know now about how everything turned out, what might you have done differently back in the 70s, 1972? You know, if you had the benefit of hindsight, would you have changed any of your actions or how you went about
That's really
the campaign?
Cate, for you, you're playing somebody who obviously there's a lot of footage of, and people have a memory of this person, and you don't want to do an impression, obviously, when you're an actor. But was there some mannerism or vocal tone of Phyllis Schlafly's that you felt really were worth replicating to get at who she was?
Well, in the very first meeting I had with Ryan and Anna, Ryan said to me, there's a long pause in the meeting, he said, her voice, he said, her annoying voice, what are we going to do about that? And I said, hang on a minute, I feel like you're judging my character. But I think that there's a, you know, what is unlike any other character in, or real life, you know, they're all real life people, but apart from the character that Sarah Paulson plays, they were very public figures at the time. And so there's, you know, but there is so much footage of Phyllis that she felt very, this is the hard thing to remember, is that the feminists and the drive to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment initially in the early stages, that was establishment thinking. And it was Phyllis's camp who were on the outside. And she felt very strongly that she had to make a very strong impression on the media. So her archive is enormous. I mean, she talked a lot, and she talked to a lot of people whenever she could. So there's a very strong sense of who she was in public. And I think the more difficult thing for all of us, because, you know, a couple of these people wrote books, but not all of them, they wrote books about their political aspirations and their outlook and their ideology, but they didn't necessarily write tell-alls. So the invention of who they were, all of these women, behind closed doors was, you know, the job that we had to do as an actor. And in the end, you have to serve the thrust of the narrative. So I think that that was, you know, it was when Phyllis was on and when she was off. When she was off, that's the invention, I guess.
Stacey, this is WNYC, so we're going to talk a bit about some of our hometown heroes who are portrayed in the series. Bella Abzug, played by Martin Martindale, and Shirley Chisholm by Uzza Aduba. You know, with the presents that Abzug and Chisholm were a bit at odds, what was the tension here, and how does exploring that tension serve the series?
Look, first of all, Shirley Chisholm should be so much more famous than she is. I actually have the same birthday as Shirley Chisholm, which I didn't know until this year when we were working on the series. I mean, she's the first black congressional woman elected. She was the first woman to run for president for the Democratic nomination. She also was truly radical. I mean, I think because she couldn't be put in any kind of box and just get along, she understood the nature of power better than anybody else. And I think that, you know, Bella was brilliant at working the system. And I think that those were the ways in which certainly Dottie portrayed them at odds or in conflict in the series. They weren't at odds necessarily. You know, Bella figured out a way to work within the system, and though Shirley did too for a very long time, she really she was a true radical visionary and tireless and fearless.
Davi, do you want to jump in there?
Oh, sure. Everything Stacey says is absolutely correct. There has been a lot of writing about the Democratic Convention of 1972, which is dramatized in episode 3 in particular. And I think that tension between pragmatic politics and visionary politics, between the idealists who say, let's just go for what is right and what should be done, and the pragmatists who say, what can be done, let's just accept that. And that really was the division between Bella and Shirley, which isn't to say they didn't get along great in Congress and they passed bills together and they were, you know, sisters in arms. But when it came to Shirley running for president, I think Bella just felt it was too soon. And, you know, in one of her writings, she said, you know, let's just wait till 76. And 76, so then that's when there'll be a woman president, which now seems very ironic. But that conflict really resonated for me with the politics of today and what we saw in the primary season. So really wanted to bring that out in episode 3.
Stacey, can you talk to us a little bit about the casting process? Because this is a bonkers cast. It's bonkers in the best way. It's so good.
Well, I guess I would say we scratched off the winning lottery ticket when Kate said yes and everything
exactly
fell into place. You know, Kate's phenomenal agent, Hilda Quealy, is an old friend of mine, and right when we were at this point, not knowing whether, you know, where we were in the process, she said, give me the script. We happened to see each other that day. Kate, the hardest working person on the planet. It was day one of her being the jury foreman at the Cannes Film Festival when she read the script and said, yes, she'd love to meet with us and with John Landgraf, who's been our tremendous champion from FX. And, then, of course, everybody put their hand up. You know, Sarah Paulson came on board pretty quickly and really took a leap of faith with us because her character wasn't fully represented in the first two episodes that Davi had already written at the point Kate came on board. And then we were just blessed. You know, Davi and her team wrote incredibly rich, fully realized characters, and every person wanted to work with Kate. And that goes for all of the men as well as all the women.
But I think that that's very kind of you that you say that, Stacey. But I also think that all of these actors and actresses, it wasn't just the you know, the women. It's also these extraordinary men, you know, that we've got showing up wanting to delve into that period of history, is we were reeling from 2016, saying how could women really have been the driving force behind electing the man who's currently in the Oval Office? And people wanted to understand why. I think there was a kind of a PTSD saying, I thought we were progressing as a species and as a nation, and we need to work out, reverse engineer how we got here.
And so I think everyone was really invested in that investigation and wanted to be part of it. And I know that's certainly me. You know, for me, the role is always the last, for better or for worse, is always the last point of entry. It's the collaboration and being part of telling that the complex nature of that story, which is what Darby and Stacey were wanting to delve into. And I think that people jumped on board incredibly quickly because they wanted to be part of that investigation.
And Stacey, I just want to take a detour on something you mentioned. You mentioned, or Darby, one of you mentioned John Landgraf from FX. And he's really made good on a promise. I remember it was a couple of years ago, I think at one of the upfronts, a reporter from Variety stood up and asked him how much programming on FX was about women, by women, or by people of color, and he was shocked and somewhat embarrassed that it wasn't enough, and he made a pledge that that would change. And he's really seemed to have made good on that. Stacey, if you, as someone who has been a producer for a long time, could you just tell us a little bit about what that means for the industry and means for you as a producer?
Yes, well, John Landgraf actually was Danny DeVito, Michael Schamburg, and my partner in a company called Jersey Films many years ago. And he was our television partner, and he's a deeply humanistic, feminist person. And when Mo Ryan, who was at Variety at the time, said that to him, he said, "I'm going to change that," and he didn't give lip service when he meant it. So for those of us who have been out there, you know, him backing all of us, and it's just to have male allies is has always been important to women in the women's movement, but certainly to women at work and women at working in the home, and having him as our partner and our champion and advocate. You know, I think, Kate, he was the first person that you sat down with in this process.
Yeah, totally. I mean, this was, you know, he had a very personal reason for wanting to make this, and that was to honor his mother's experience. And, you know, he was raised by a feminist mother, and he was wanting to know what had changed and how we all felt, and how many pockets of this period of history were still unknown to all of us, and why was the notion of equality so polarizing. So it felt very personal. And also, I must say, in the wake of the pandemic, you know, watching the way he has had an extraordinary duty of care to, you know, to his staff at FX and to us as a production, and, you know, he's an extraordinary man, you know, who is a strong moral backbone, you know, but an amazing shepherd and collaborator.
My guests are Stacey Scherer, executive producer, Darby Waller, direct creator and showrunner and writer, and Kate Planchek, executive producer and stars as Phyllis Schlafly in Mrs. America. So, Kate, there's this great scene. I want to mention Betty Friedan before we run out of time. There's this great scene of a debate between Phyllis and Betty Friedan. And at first, Phyllis is reluctant to interrupt Betty's monologues. But as time goes on, Phyllis is able to really get Betty Friedan worked up. And we actually have a clip of the real-life example of that dynamic playing out. This is from 1976, from Good Morning America, Phyllis Schlafly and Betty Friedan debating the ERA.
But it also should bar those indirect quotas, which make women have to have higher grades than men to get into the same school and so on. But we already know that that law isn't being enforced. In other words, in the
name
that
one
law
school where women have to get higher grades to get into school.
Oh, this is
name one.
This is true in universities. I can name it. I can name,
well,
30,
name
40, 50.
Don't name 30. Just name one.
What?
One
Why
school where women have to get higher grades to get into school.
I would have suggested the viewers to tell Mrs. Schlafly the situation of the... I can name any number of them, so I'm not going to name.
Well, okay.
One.
The upshot of what?
Okay, so first of all, no one can say her last name.
We can try to see her field day. Will
Phyllis's name correctly? She like never gets it right.
Although you have a great line in there that helped you. It's like L after H and L after Y. But anyway, Kate, my question is to you: why do you think people were drawn to her? What were her strengths as an orator?
I think she bamboozled people with I always think about her as being a long distance runner, and that, you know, what we tried to represent in the debate is that she was incredibly polite and disciplined, but she could not stand it when people got the facts wrong. And I think that in a way, what stalled, I think, the ERA was semantics. And that she was the queen of semantics, that and in that way, it's kind of true and appropriate that she went and got a law degree in her 50s, because she's like a lawyer, that she will pull people up on commas and full stops and dates, and she won't countenance generalities. She won't countenance doubt. She won't countenance a philosophical discussion. She wants to deal with facts. And so what happened with the ERA debates is that they became increasingly literal and small. And she kept the discussion small. She never allowed the discussion to become aspirational or inspirational, which frankly is what I think the Constitution is. It's the document from which laws are divined and made. And, you know, and so that's, she knew that if you had an inspirational idea like the equal, like equality, go into the Constitution, you would have, you know, you would open the doors to so many things that she was terrified of. And so I think, you know, it's people were bamboozled by her relentlessness, I think. And also she was incredibly gracious and graceful and seemingly polite, but she would just keep talking, and not always necessarily accurately herself, because if you unpicked some of the things that she said, they didn't make sense. Like, she got her own dates and facts wrong about her, you know, her own educational upbringing, but that sort of didn't seem to matter, because people were always trying to get to the philosophy behind it, So she sort of got a lot of things slipped under the radar herself, I think.
Last question, and it's a spoiler alert for people who don't want to know. And a lot of people remember this actually happening, but if you don't, you're warned. Just turn down the radio for a second. At the end of the series, we see her at the highest point in her power, but also at sort of the lowest point in her power. She helps get Ronald Reagan elected, and then she's passed over for any sort of position of any sort of importance. Davi, why did you want to end there?
I think my main point with the series, you know, the central question is Sisterhood powerful? Then the counterpoint to that is that, you know, going up against Sisterhood never wins, never pays, crime never pays. And I think that really summed it up, that all this work she did was for naught in terms of what she really wanted to do was save the country from the Russians and by getting an appointment in the Pentagon. So it was important to me to really end there, because I think that really encapsulates what she was doing and what the consequence of what she did the entire decade was. To take her from her high point and then have it ripped from her and leave her in a kitchen. And it's the first time in the series she's ever doing anything domestic or ever dons an apron. And that was purposeful to, this was the cage that she built for all women. And then she gets stuck inside it.
That was my conversation with creator and showrunner Davi Waller, executive producer Stacey Scher, and executive producer and actor Kate Blanchett. They were here to talk about Mrs. America, which is streaming on Hulu. Yesterday, the series received 10 Emmy nominations, including Best Limited Series.